You are now listening to the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
Where we stop at nothing to bring you the right facts on health, fitness, and psychology. Featuring some of the world's most experienced professionals. So you can learn, live, and live. With your hosts, Meg, Dr. D, and Mehdi.
All right. Cannabis or hemp is one of the oldest yet most misunderstood medications that are being used out there. So today we are joined by Colleen Higgins, who is a pharmacist, an author, and an educator. This teaches us a lot about medical cannabis and how it's relevant to those of us in the States all the way over to you guys in Kuwait.
I think she did a great job breaking down the side effects, and she talked a lot about the symptoms, how it could also, what I liked about it is how she said that it's not the one and all, that it could also be a tool for other medication, especially for psychiatric patients. I think that would be a really nice thing to think about.
It was awesome because through minute one all the way through minute 18, she kind of broke down all the usages for it and what the different types of marijuana, CBD, cannabinoids, and what they all do. So that was amazing. And even when we got into a little bit of a debate from about minute 23 to minute 36, she was very open to the conversation and she didn't get too defensive about it. And I think it was such a great interview. It was a lot of fun learning about this and understanding the medical uses for it. So with that said, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. And please do not forget to leave us a rating and review. All this and more in today's episode. In this episode, we're talking about getting high, how high. Oh, no, sorry. We are actually talking about a very serious subject that has come up over the last few years. Joining us is Colleen Higgins. She is a cannabis expert, and she's hopefully going to clear up a lot of the misconceptions that we've heard about with CBD, cannabis, marijuana, medical marijuana. Welcome to the show, Colleen.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
Great.
Yep. Well, excited. Excited to talk about my favorite subject.
That's awesome. So I think we could kick it off by talking about, I would say, the difference between marijuana for recreational use and marijuana for medical use.
Sure. Good question. I think the first thing you can say about a medical program is that you are regulating it, right? So with the cannabis plant, anything you put into the ground is going to come out of the plant as well. So if you are not regulating the nutrients and testing it for mites and fungus and mold, then you're not really a medical program. These are things that when inhaled can hurt people. So in a medical program, you really have a lot of restrictions. I'm friends with one of the growers here in Connecticut, and he said, we can't call it organic, but we're as close to organic as you can get because whatever goes in is going to come out of the plant as well. So that's the first start of a medical program. In terms of medical versus recreational, I would also say that you have the opportunity to have higher strength products in a medical program. So typically, somebody who's dealing with chronic pain or other issues might take higher doses than are available in a recreational program.
That makes sense. Well,
that makes sense. Yep. Yes.
That's a good distinction between medical marijuana and recreational, but we've also got CBD, we've got THC, we've got CBG, CBN.
Cannabinoids.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all pieces. The funniest thing is they're all pieces of one plant, right? But we just kind of take the pieces apart and then it becomes much more complicated. So if we're looking at the genus of cannabis, right, we start with cannabis, then you have, and even up until the 20th century, we've been arguing about, is it one genus? Is it multiple strains and substrains? So you have cannabis, and then you have different plants under the cannabis genus. So you have cannabis sativa, which actually hemp, and hemp is technically a cannabis strain that has less than 0.3% THC, but usually higher amounts of CBD and other things as well. So you have, that's usually cannabis sativa, but it was misnamed. So we made a mistake with the naming of it. So most people associate cannabis sativa with a strain that has a lot of THC and is very wakeful. You have cannabis indica, which is a little bit different looking. And those strains typically tend to be high in the THC molecule, but all cannabis in those little crystals that cover the plant, they are full of cannabinoids. That's what they're called, cannabinoids. And we're continuously discovering these cannabinoids. So my book, The Cannabis Prescription, when I wrote it last year and was writing it, there was 104 cannabinoids that were identified. Wow. I put it out just in March. I just published it and released it on Amazon in March. And by then there was 108. So my book was already outdated just a few months after. So these cannabinoids, the most identifiable one was always THC. tetrahydrocannabidiol, which gives a high feeling. And most people just associate the high feeling with cannabis. That's all we know, right? But it is a dose-related psychoactive side effect, meaning if you take very, very little, you might not feel it at all. If you take a lot, you're going to feel it very strongly. But there's other cannabinoids, CBD, which is cannabidiol, really got noticed in about a decade ago in Colorado when it was found to help children with seizures, these really horrible seizure disorders, which can't be treated with the pharma drugs. They found by giving this cannabinoid, and it wasn't just CBD, by the way, it was high CBD with a little bit of THC is most effective. That was found to be most effective. But there are a plethora of other really great cannabinoids, CBG, cannabigerol, I believe is how you pronounce that one. There's a study out of Italy showing that it had curative properties for Crohn's and inflammatory diseases of the bowel. We have all these receptors in our bowel that the cannabis cannabinoids fit in there like a lock and key. CBN is also helped with sleep, and these are non-psychoactive cannabinoids. THCV is thought to help with obesity and diabetes. So it's really the blend of all the cannabinoids, but whenever we talk about cannabis, we like to just isolate one out. But really the plant itself has just many, many benefits going on there altogether. So yeah, THC is the one that gives that psychoactive high feeling.
I recently read an article about 6 or 7 months ago talking about cannabinoids being researched in Canada because they've had a high success rate curing cancer. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with that research, but the sample size, everything, it looked pretty good and it looked pretty legitimate.
Cancer is fascinating because, and there are studies out there saying this should be considered, if not a primary therapy, at least an adjunct therapy in chemotherapy, because THC does have cancer killing properties. There have been studies out that shows it can kill cancer cells. But again, we want to blend that with CBD, which can help kind of contain cancers. We recommend that if you're going to have a biopsy or something like that, we recommend to patients that you take at least 100 milligrams of CBD to kind of just help contain those cancer cells. Because as soon as you cut it, boom, they start flying around the body. So yes, there are cancer killing properties. Problem is, and again, I wrote about this in the book, because a lot of people do come in when it's a last resort and really want something to help them, is A, if you're taking it orally, which is how you dose these higher doses, it's a dose-related limiting point because you need super high doses of both THC and CBD to get to that cancer-killing level. But taking oral doses of CBD, even when you take it with CBD, you know, people just get knocked out and they don't feel good and they don't want to not feel good. You want to try and keep your wits about you. So the limiting factor of using cannabis for cancer is the high feeling of the THC. Now, an interesting little tidbit, I was talking about the blending of the cannabinoids. When you have THC alone, right, it has a strong psychoactive feeling to it. When you blend it with CBD, it actually mellows out and makes the THC side effects more tolerable. So I always tell patients to use double or triple the amount of CBD to the THC dose. And a lot of times it's much more tolerable than using THC by itself. But even doing that, for the cancer killing, when taken orally, it's just limiting because people can't get to these 200 and 300 milligram doses per dose without feeling too overwhelmed by the side effects. And you know, the side effects of any chemo drug or any cancer drug, that's what's going to limit patients. If you want to keep the patient alive and happy with THC, it's tough. It's tough to take.
You know, I wanted to ask you, since you're a pharmacist, I mean, I'll ask another question about, of course, being a psychologist and treating depression, anxiety. But I was reading about you and I was thinking, a pharmacist that is really interested in studying, most pharmacists, especially here, pharmaceuticals are all about money and pushing drugs, medication that is. Yep. And I feel like even as the doctors here, they get rewarded in whatever way you want to call that by prescribing medication. In the clinic, we have all these psych reps coming in waiting for hours to talk to the psychiatrist, right? I feel like it's the idea that this is what pharmacists do. They want to sell this much medication so that way they can benefit. And we all know the politics behind it. I mean, whatever, even with this coronavirus and who's going to take care of this vaccination and who's making money and whatever. So I was wondering, like, how can a pharmacist, I'm sure that was your training in the beginning, and then suddenly you decided, and you write it in your book, actually, you say that you're totally against pushing medication.
I know, it's funny. You come out, you're all happy, ready to go. And then you see this progress of how people go into a doctor and are given a pill. and then another pill. And usually it comes from personal experience. So for me, I was sick all the time with sinus infections. So I would constantly, and I'm talking every 6 to 8 weeks, I would get another massive sinus infection, and they would come along with really bad headaches. I was actually, I had a bald spot in the back of my head. I would have rashes on my elbows, and the doctors just didn't know. And I go again and again, and I loved my ear, nose, and throat doctor. But after two surgeries, I was like, is this really the only way that we treat this? And I, knowing the drugs, I'm like, there's nothing else out there. We give an antibiotic, we give a steroid, we give a steroid spray to our nose. And he's like, well, we don't know how other to treat it, because that's how they're trained. And that's how I was trained. You go to pharmacy school, you're going to get trained. If you go to med school, you're going to get trained in how to give out pharma drugs, unless you look elsewhere. So eventually I just got sick of being sick, and I went on a cleanse. I read a book called The Clean Diet by Dr. Alejandro Younger, and he is a cardiologist. And you remove everything out of your diet that might cause inflammation and then put it back slowly. You do that for 3 weeks and then you put it back slowly. And I would add cheese back in and that would immediately cause it. So I linked it to dairy. I was sick all the time from the time I was a little kid. Since then, I never get a sinus infection. And that was, let's see, my daughter's 13. So that was about 12 years ago because I was just sick of being sick. And the way they were treating me was silly. So then I really started to think about it. And I thought, well, all these drugs are Band-Aids. None of them are getting the root cause of the problem. I was talking to a patient yesterday who was having some severe depression, and they put her on the first antidepressant and that wasn't working. We'll try another one. And I said, hon, what are you eating these days? Oh, I'm eating so much sugar and I'm eating so many packaged foods and I'm feeling so bad. And I said, that's step one. Step two is you got to get up and exercise. I bet you're not exercising anymore. And she goes, no, I stopped. I used to. And I said, step two. We put her on a little dose of a mild dose of a THC and a sativa tablet to try to help boost her mood. But she was also on muscle relaxers, which was knocking her out. Some Ativan after she switched after her clonazepam. It was like drug after. I was just like, this is a soupy mess. We just kind of throw another pill and then throw another pill and then throw another pill. So I have gone against my pharma peeps in where I just don't believe that's the way to wellness anymore. And the drugs we have, they do help. They help a lot of people, but they should be a Band-Aid. They should not be what we are expected to live on for our entire lives. Just a Band-Aid for a short amount of time. The sleeping pills were given out. People were taking them every day for years and years. And if you try to come off that, good luck. That's going to be brutal to come off a sleeping tablet. And the antidepressants they have found out been moderately successful, are very difficult to come off of. I've had so many patients tell me they could not come off these drugs. They just felt horrible. And this woman was trying to come off hers. I had to tell her how to plan it and give it time and take it super, super slow. So we have this idea that you're sick, you get a pill. You're sick, you get a pill. And as a pharmacist, I just saw this was not working for people. Works for a small percentage, but not everybody. You've got another huge portion of the population who needs something else.
Yeah, absolutely. I just got done talking with one of the girls back in Kuwait, actually a good friend of mine, and heartburn has been an issue. And there's been pill after pill and all kinds of, and it goes back to gut health and, you know, but it's taking that time to find out what are your triggers? What are the things that, you know, you have to kind of eliminate things, and it's a slow process. And it's, I think from a doctor perspective, you know, do I teach this person how to live this, you know, different lifestyle that is momentary decisions that takes a lot of focus and work, you know, or can I just give them this pill and it can, like you said, put the Band-Aid on when it doesn't work, we'll find another one. And that's not right. And I like you've disrupted your field and I find that with, like, you know, even physical therapists, things like that too, they get very boxed in, you know, I think to different modalities of how to heal and wellness. And it's the same thing with, pharmacies and doctors. And I remember with my grandfather, when he was a paraplegic, he had, you know, strokes, he had all kinds of issues. And that was a constant discussion between my dad and his brothers and the medical staff of what are the medications they on? How are these interacting with each other? And I think that's the thing that's overlooked a lot of times.
Yeah.
As well.
So on 18 pills all the time, dozen pills by the time they get to be a senior, it's affecting dementia levels. It's affecting cognitive function. You know, 10 years ago, we were like, great, give us that pill. I want to eat my cheeseburger, you know, like no problem. But now it's like,
Problems is it causing when you slap a Band-Aid on that one? You're not getting to the source of anything and more is going to show up. Exactly. So you did bring up dementia, and I think like Parkinson's is another one. And so we talked about cancer and cannabis being able to help with that. But knowing that a lot of people, I think like this generation that is on this high amount pharmaceuticals, and, you know, the aging population getting there, like what effect is that having on dementia and Parkinson's and these things? And how is cannabis helping? And what kind of information do you have with that aging population where it might be, you know, people concerned about the number of pills that their parents are on as their teenager?
I'm very concerned about the number of pills my parents are on. My father is in the first stages of dementia, and we don't have any history of that in our family in any direction, right? And he's been on this statin for over a decade, at least 15 years. He's been on a statin for his cholesterol because that's what they give him, even though his cholesterol is not that high anymore. But I worry, those are some potent drugs. We give them out like candy. You just figure, I got a little high cholesterol here, I'm going to give you a statin. And we have more and more dementia in this, which is related to an inflammation of the brain. Mm-hmm. It's this chronic underlying inflammation, which cannabis helps treat, that causes the inflammation and lesions in the brain, both for dementia and for Parkinson's. And by the way, I list those drugs in my book, and they're not great. They're not great. They're really not so good for treating either part. And once you get to the severe stage, you got to come off them because they can increase death rates. So these drugs are, again, the little Band-Aids, and they really don't help. I think the only thing that was shown to decrease Parkinson's progression was exercise.
Mm-hmm. There's been some interesting studies on movement and dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and it's getting out of that autopilot again, you know, this routine of not teaching the body anything new, not letting the brain, you know, this, I don't know if neuroplasticity is anything that you're into researching and studying about.
Not really, but it sounds super interesting.
The brain can, we look at it as this hardwired thing that we can't change, right? And dementia, when it goes broken, the wire's broke, you can't fix it, right? And that's not necessarily true.
We're always
your brain.
Newer connections. You keep that body, you look at people that work until they're 85, 90 years old, their connections are rolling. They don't ever slow down and come down. But if you just stop and then you're like, oh, I'll take a pill, it's just, you're not going to get the same result.
Well, you just look at all the blue zones around the world. I mean, if you look at everywhere in the world that has a blue zone where people live past the age of 100, they're all working till they're 95. They're all learning new skills and they're all eating essentially almost the same diet, but in different regions based off of their ancestral eating. It's all typical clean food and a lot of movement. When I saw a 97-year-old Japanese guy still going spearfishing, I was like, dude, I'm doing something wrong in life. I wanted to ask you a question in regards to cannabis and pain relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've seen a lot, like you said, come out in the last 10 years. And I think cannabis has kind of been bastardized over the last 5 years. And I knew that it reached its peak when I started seeing CBD gummies and, you know, CBD candy bars. And then the fitness industry grabbed hold of it and it just started blowing up with us for recovery and this and that. And now, how can we establish a good CBD or a good source of cannabis versus a bad source of cannabis? Like you said earlier, when people use it recreationally, we could be buying pot from the guy that grows it in his basement with mold and fungus and whatever else on it. We're not going to know, and cockroaches in it, you know? So how can you establish like what's good, what's bad with everything that's on the market?
That is a great question. And I have to say that it's very hard for people right now. And I almost think it's designed that way. If you don't know where to get your products, you'll go, you know what? I don't want to waste my time. I don't waste my money. I'll just get my pharma drugs. We'll be good to go like that, right? So in order to find products, you have to do research in order to determine, because you can get it in the gas station here, you know,
anywhere.
We have these pop-up shops and you don't know if there's anything in it. You don't know if you're wasting your money completely. So you do have to spend some time. But if people are confused, they're just going to go back to their pharma drugs. It's horrible to say. As a pharmacist of over 20 years, I've watched how the pricing works. We remember hearing about Martin Shkreli. Shkreli, did I say his name wrong? I probably totally slaughtered that name. But the guy who came out, he was a little bit off, and he's like, I'm going to raise the price of this pill from $4 a dose to $700.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I read something about that.
Because I can. And let me just say, he wasn't the first. We're sitting there watching how they take a $15 cream and jack it up to $120. Or we have these $1,000 creams. And I'm like, how, year after year, how do these drugs come out at these prices? And it's designed to keep the money flowing to pharma. When cannabis finally becomes fully legalized, thank you, like in Canada and part of the healthcare community, it's going to take a lot of money away from that.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot. It's always about the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it was classified in the way that it was in the beginning, wasn't it?
It was not about science. No. It was completely about racism, first of all. It was kicked off with racism. And then DuPont and Hearst didn't want to deal with hemp as a fantastic alternative to paper. Hearst had the timber mills for his newspapers, didn't want to lose that. DuPont had synthetic fibers, didn't want to deal with the fire. You know, so it was all about the money. And so it got rid of it. But then as the drugs really took off, you know, drug development really took off, I like to say, in the 90s. That's when I first started working in pharmacies, and I was working with the HIV epidemic. So we had Retrovir and AZT, and those were brilliant, brilliant drugs, right? You have a disease, it's unknown. It's kind of like what's going on now. People were scared, didn't know how to treat it. And then the drugs came along, and they're great, great, great drugs. And then from there, people just kind of kept on this wave. So then we had diabetes, right? As soon as we took all the sugar out of everything, we all got fat. So the diabetes came along. Then the cholesterol drugs came along to help you with the diabetes, because that's all linked together too. So all this living on
domino effect.
Domino effects. And then if cannabis comes in here, you suddenly have dementia drugs that are not going to be used as much. You suddenly, and they're very expensive. Namenda, the generic, that was a $1.5 billion drug, I think, you know, each year, each year. It's making a lot of money. So if cannabis comes out, you are looking at a big chunk of money that's going to go away from pharma. And they're not going to give that up easily. They're not going to give that up easily.
And I think that's what I was saying is, like, because as a pharmacist, you're moving to the cannabis and the effect it has and the usefulness, a lot of pharmaceutical companies are going to get very upset because it is about money. And it is, but they don't want to hear that their drug is not going to work as well as cannabis, for example. It's the same thing in the psychiatric world. The idea is that when we were talking earlier about why do people, I think people, especially in this part of the world, or maybe not, and maybe globally, it's like they want something that can help them very quickly, as we were saying earlier. So for them to think about, so I guess my question to you is that, do you, because when you try to convince someone that has to take an antidepressant medication and you say, look, there might be an alternative, obviously not in Kuwait, but in the US, they're always asking you, well, you know, first of all, because they hear cannabis and they're like, oh, I don't do illegal drug. No, it's against my culture, religion, whatever. But then on the other hand, they're like, no, but does it work as effective? Will I see the result right away? Right. And I mean, even as a psychotherapist, it's like, people will go to get that drug, the antidepressant, anti-anxiety, before they will even think about really trying to figure out why did you get the way you did and where are these symptoms coming from and what can we do to really work on it in a natural way. Do you really think that is it ever going to give that effect, the result of someone's taking a cannabis versus someone taking an antidepressant? Will they see the result as fast? How are we going to convince these individuals?
Great question. Because, I mean, antidepressants have their own timeline. You know, it's a minimum of 6 weeks. You want to give them a good 6 weeks. Yeah. And that's a long time to wait. And when people are in pain, they just want to reach for whatever's going to work. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that cannabis needs to be thought of as a complete alternative to antidepressants, antipsychotics. I think it just needs to be considered as another tool in the toolbox, right? If they don't work, if you have somebody who's tried Zoloft and who's tried Prozac, and who's tried Celexa, and these SSRIs are, and then we've gone over to Effexor, and then we've tried Wellbutrin, and then we jacked the dose up, and then we've added a second drug on, and it's not working. You know, wish, A, there's the money thing again, right? Those are cheap drugs. You can take that prescription for $10, and then that's easy to do. Instead of saying, hey, maybe we should get you a nutritionist. Maybe we should get you somebody to help you with exercise planning. Maybe we should help you get in a group therapy where people can kind of talk about it. These are different ways of approaching how to treat a patient, but they're probably more expensive. Although we don't know that. The way the drugs cost now, I'd be willing to debate that fact, but it's a different approach than what has kind of developed in the last 30 years where, oh, you're sick, we'll give you a pill. Oh, okay, which now we got another one. Oh, another one's coming out. Oh, okay, we'll get, you know, it's a different mentality. And as somebody who's lived it and as somebody who hands out the meds and handed out the med, I just think it's time for somebody to speak up and say, this is something's got to change. And not everybody's pleased with the path that we're on. There are other opportunities for other practitioners to get out there and say, hey, if you're not feeling good, I can treat you this way, or I can look in an alternative route than just giving you another pill.
What side effects have you seen people experiencing when they are on cannabis and are depressed, for example, or having panic attacks? Sure. Have you seen any side effects?
Funny enough, I always come to two patients that have had the most severe panic and PTSD. I mean, I've seen the most amazing results, first of all, with people with severe fear. And there are studies related to the fear response, which we don't, funny enough, don't have drugs related to the fear response. But as we age, there seems to be more fear developing. There's probably some biological changes in the brain. So with these patients, a lot of times they're dosing, and I just had an older woman who lost her mother, and she was feeling so traumatized. And she ended up taking some very big doses of THC, which for somebody who's happy would probably think, wow, that was horrible. I felt just out of control and just so high. And I just really hated it. I mean, people would really, but when they're in this trauma state, they can take these big doses and almost not feel them. So with the two patients I had with the very worst PTSD, I brought them down on the THC and I added the CBD into equal amounts. And that seemed to be the best option, was not going higher and higher doses on THC. You'd think they would get higher. It wasn't happening at all. It was a matter of giving that blend, that full cannabis blend, in terms of getting them to calm down and feel better and feel like they could walk through that trauma and start to work on it and feel better. Because again, it's just a tool, right? It's just a tool to help us deal with the traumas that we've dealt with that are giving us these symptoms of anxiety and sleep disorders and panic. So, you know, it's all about the dose. I say it's all about the dose with any drug. This one happens to be a lot safer than the pharma drugs. You take too much, you're not going to feel good for a while, most likely, but you will wake up and you will be fine. We haven't found anybody that's died, at least without mixing some other stuff in there. And I just think we have to look at dosing and we have to look at what happens with the patient and we have to consider this a tool for those where other things aren't working.
Just going along with that, there was some research that I came across over the past couple of years since this has come out, especially when it came to marijuana, medical marijuana, cannabis, and the usage of it. And there have been several studies linked to gynecomastia in men, which is the non-scientific term is bitch tits for all of our listeners. Excuse my language, but I got to throw a couple of those in.
Men. Yes.
I got to throw a couple of those in every episode. There have been studies that have linked to schizophrenia. There have been also studies that have linked to impotency for men and reduced sperm rate. So now every drug has a side effect. So I'm sure medical marijuana and marijuana in general do have a side effect. Now, can you talk about any of those side effects that have been researched over the last few years? And, you know, there have been some high rates in certain males, which could go back to genetics at the end of the day.
I would say that in terms of schizophrenia, that's kind of the big one. I've talked to a couple of psychiatric groups, and that's the one that they have mentioned. And I would say there's probably either, there's a couple of factors there. There's probably a history, a genetic factor in that as well. And they're self-medicating by using lots and lots of cannabis. And yes, THC at higher doses, which is a psychoactive drug, can kind of promote that or the symptoms that come out with that, I would say for sure. The gynecomastia one, I have not heard about whether or not that's actually, that would be a hormonal, right? So that we're increasing estrogen, decreasing testosterone.
It does something with the hormone. That's what I've read. And
I'm wondering if that's like a sourcing issue or if that's maybe something, a mix of another side effect of something else. I don't know.
Possibly, right? Possibly something like that if you're playing with the hormones. And then what was the other one? Oh, the impotence.
Yeah.
So in terms of impotence, that might be a dose-related side effect. I have had men ask me that in the dispensary about that.
Yeah.
And I said, well, first of all, if you're using an indica type. So in terms of cannabis, you have indica and sativa are the strains that are THC dominant. Indica's in the bed, in the couch.
I like that.
You know, you're not going anywhere. Sativas are more stimulating, but you got to watch out for people that have anxiety. They can actually induce the anxiety.
That was actually my next question. Sorry, I'm going to cut you off because I can jump right into that question. This has also come out in a lot of research that has suggested that it can actually increase panic attacks and anxiety for some people. And there have been known cases of people having heart attacks. So can you talk about that a little bit? And indica in the bed, in the couch, which is great. But I've known people in the United States that have tried it and they were like, I can never do this again. So two-part question. That's the first part. Second part, can we actually utilize marijuana in all of its form without the THC or without the high, without the psychosomatic aspects of it?
Yep. Yes. So probably that's going to be a dose-related issue, right? So when you talk to people, and it took me actually, when I first started working in the dispensary, I had to realize it myself. When people take a joint home or try it, right? We're trying it, quote unquote. What do they do?
Yeah.
You know, way too much. And then they're wondering why they feel so horrible. So when I consult with people, I say 1 2-3 second puff, boom, stop, put it down. Don't go back. You're starting, if you're taking an oral dose or a sublingual dose, you're starting at 2.5 milligrams. You're keeping it super, super low. When I talk to people that have anxiety, I tell them that you want to be aware. If you're using this, it's almost like too much coffee. When you have too much coffee, you get a little shaky. So it's the same effect if you're using these very strong, clean sativa strains. So that's why hybrids are developed, where they blend the strains together and you have a mix of the two. Or for most people that deal with panic, I am always telling them to do a blend of CBD and THC together. When you have that blend, you're mellowing out that psychoactivity of the THC, and you're getting a more mellow type of a feeling. So it's dose and it's strain. Mm-hmm. And the strain is indicated from the terpenes. The terpenes are just the natural smells and tastes of the plant. So indicas typically have a lot of something called linalool, which is in lavender. And it's also relaxing. It also has myrcene in there, which is a relaxing, where sativas have limonene, which is like in lemons. So it's very uplifting as well. So you get some strains that are just too up for some people, and they'll make them anxious in a pop. So you do have to be familiar with the strains. But for people that deal with panic, I always tell them to, if you use a sativa and it makes you anxious, either switch to a different strain or blend it half and half with a CBD plant. We have a plant right now that is almost all CBD and no THC. So just blend it together and it will mellow that out. But for sure, you can get anxiety and panic when you take it and you puff it too much and you use way too much. And if you're using a sativa strain.
So basically, sure, don't do what they do in that movie, How High.
But I say that's, I love it. I was there Colorado the opening weekend when they started selling. I was one of the idiots that waited in line for 3 hours. but it was awesome walking in. It was almost like a flow chart of like symptoms and strains and kind of helping you navigate that. And something that I've found with it, I have to be very careful with some of the strains that I have used and then what kind of activities I guess I'm doing with that. You know, if I take one and then I get on social media, I feel like anxiety and fear and those kinds of things like seem to escalate. Self-consciousness is something that really comes up for me. So I have to put my phone on airplane mode and put it away if I'm going to try to chill out.
It's a good rule to have. You should never social media high. It's a bad thing.
It doesn't relax you at all.
I also have a question on like dispensary, I guess, like shopping and things. I mean, you've just given a lot of information that I wish I would have been given, you know, at a lot of times when I've been there. And like the difference between gummies and hard candies and smoking and edibles and kind of health-wise. And I think just like the variation of all those. I feel like gummies like act a little bit faster than the hard candies. And then I know some people are worried about smoking, so they want like other options. But then these edibles, like there's sugars and additives and things in there that we talk about that are not necessarily nutritious either. So I guess like what would be a kind of a flowchart or guide in what you need
This is exactly what I give the patients when I talk to them, because I want to make sure they don't make these kind of mistakes, you know, because my first question is often, you know, when I start talking about edibles, I go, have you tried an edible before? And the answer is either I felt nothing or I never want to take one again. You know, it's like there's no in between, and it's all because of the dose again. So we have pills, which are great, but I tell, because there's no sugar and you don't have to worry about all that kind of stuff, but anything that lands in the belly, right? Anything, whether it's a drink, whether it's a pill, whether it's a food, whether it's a gummy, the base that it's in might affect the absorption time a little bit, but anything that lands in the belly is typically about an hour to absorb. Biggest mistake people make. They take an edible half an hour later, they go, it's not strong enough, I'm going to take some more. And then they take more. 2 hours later, they're like, that was a mistake. But, and then you have 4 to 6 hours of duration. So it's really a long duration. So you want to start with the right dose. I always have patients start who are sensitive to medications at 2.5 milligrams of THC. A lot of times I'll blend it with the CBD. So you have equal amounts of both if they're hypersensitive. And I've only had one woman I can think of who was the most sensitive patient I've ever seen in my life. Then I'll start 1.25. Just start where you feel comfortable. Otherwise, most of, I think the gummies and everything are in 5 milligram increments in the rec markets because they are either 5 or 10. They don't let it get any bigger. But I know people where 10 milligrams is too much. So you want to start low. You want to take that hour, hour and a half for it to start working. And you don't want to take anything else for 6 hours. Just let that evaluation happen. Does it work? Does it not work? Was it too strong? Was it not strong enough? And slowly you bring the dose up just like a medicine, like we would medically. Right. You know, instead of this random, oh, I'm just going to take something and hope it works. You know, like,
is that? And I think that's where a lot of the misunderstanding comes from. It is just there's not a lot of guidance on that, or just you know, it, because it is available that way, there's not really the prescription put in place. So it's good that there's people like you out there to kind of help bring awareness.
My best friends live in California, and she's like, she's constantly asking me for questions, constantly asking me to send my book out and do things. So she owns a yoga studio, so she's trying to get my book out to people because she's like, I'm so sick of going into the dispensary and talking to, legally they can't give the advice out because they're not a health professional. But she's like, I just don't want to talk to another bud tender who's like, oh, you'll really like this drink. She's like, this is my symptom. What's my dose? With just a little bit more of a medical approach. But if you think about it, the doctors aren't trained yet. We don't have it in medical schools yet. You know, I have to do all.
Just out of curiosity, it's great, but you know, we're in Kuwait, so we're in a fairly religious, very religious country. And we talked about this a little bit before the show started. And I think this is one of the most important things because I've tried to convince people that, hey, you can take CBD and it should have no problems with religion or anything because you're not getting the psychedelic effect. You're not getting the THC. Mm-hmm. You're not getting the high out of it. And there are a lot of benefits to hemp and cannabinoids and everything. And you know, they were kind of bent like, no, there's not that. We're not going to go down that route because of religious reasons, which is fine, to each their own. But at the same time, are there alternatives that people can also look at besides CBD? Is there something that's close to it in nature, such as theanine or something along those lines that you could recommend for our listeners here in the Middle East?
I'm a huge fan of turmeric. I am a triathlete. So I was doing really, really well in my training up until COVID. And then it was like, I fell off a whole, you know, just fell into the land of cookies and donuts. So now when I try and work out, I'm always inflaming myself or pulling a knee or something like that. It's amazing what happens as you get older. You can just hurt yourself sleeping. And I take 30 milligrams of CBD, that's my dose, along with a teaspoon of fermented turmeric. And if I'm really in pain, then, and I'll always do PT. I'll always make sure to do some PT. So if I hurt a muscle, I strengthen the muscles around it and I'll do that. And then maybe if it's really bad, I'll add some ibuprofen on for a few days. But in terms of other potent anti-inflammatories, I always think of ibuprofen is wonderful. I mean, who doesn't love ibuprofen? I don't know if you guys love it so much. I love ibuprofen. It's a good friend, but it's not good for you when you take it regularly. Yeah. It's been linked to increased strokes and heart attacks. We have other anti-inflammatories like prednisone and, you know, that are really, really effective, but you can't take them for a long period of time. So it's tough. I don't know of any other anti-inflammatories.
What about things in the oregano family? Because there have been a lot of things with oregano linked to being anti-inflammatory along with za'atar. What's za'atar in English? Thyme? Is it thyme?
Thyme.
Whatever. Sorry, I'm half Kuwaiti. I can get away with it, all right? And I'm not reading off of Google. I'm going off of memory right now.
He'll play the Kuwaiti card when it's convenient. And then he'll play the Boston card when it's convenient. He does.
There's another one, and I don't even know how to say this in English, and my mother-in-law introduced me to it called Margadouche. Dr. D, have you ever heard of that?
Margadouche. I've heard of that one.
Margadouche?
Yeah.
I've heard of that one, Maddie. I know what you're talking about.
What's it look like?
I drink it in a liquid form.
Obviously, I'm not Arab enough. For your mom, at least.
I think it's linked to the oregano family, but I've been drinking it for the past like 2 weeks and it has like done wonders for me. So like those are some things that I was hopefully curious that you could probably chime into because we're in a country that we can't readily get CBD. It's funny because we have hemp milk at the stores here or had them before. Yeah.
I know. We'll take it only so far, but not too far.
Yeah.
I've always heard of oregano as an antibacterial.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard of it as an anti-inflammatory, but I know that it can be used to fight like viruses and colds.
I travel with it all the time, like parasites and you know things like that, depending on where you're going.
The tinctures are brutal. And the flavor of it is so
strong.
It burns. Yeah. It's tough to take.
You got
to
have a carrier oil for that one.
But I don't know about thyme. I'll have to look into thyme. I hadn't heard anything about thyme as a supplement. Not yet, at least.
Thyme is good for respiratory issues. Yeah. So maybe a breathing component, like slowing breathing down or something. I suppose that could.
I take a lung supplement from Swanson Vitamins. That's a blend of like almost two dozen herbs. I love it. I noticed it right away because around the allergy season right now, it gets a little tough for me to breathe. And I noticed right away it was working. I was like, ooh, interesting. So I'm sure.
You know, I think here, I teach at the university here. It's so funny because my students will constantly tell you, so I was teaching an addiction class. They always tell you, come on, Dr. D, you know that it's like everywhere in the U.S., marijuana is good for you. You know, you could use marijuana. It should not be considered as a drug. And the idea is that, and then I have some students who studied in the U.S., so they have a card, all right? Mm-hmm. And I feel that maybe in the U.S. is not monitored as much because according to these students, it's like so easy to get this medical marijuana. You can go to the dispenser, you can get it from whatever the place that they're buying it as long as you have this card. So I feel like if that's true, I mean, I haven't done it in the U.S. Like I was telling you earlier, the only time I've came to know CBD is when I was in the States last year. And I even noticed my sister who has a lot of joints and pains, she was rubbing an oil on it. I went to the hairdresser. I saw a CBD thing there for hair. I was shocked at Walgreens everywhere. I was thinking, wow, this is like in Illinois. But then here, they're making it look like, come on, it's not addictive. I don't know why the government is making it such a big deal. It has proven. I have so many patients sit there and they want to educate me on how this is a great thing and it's not addictive. But I don't know if that's really true.
I think, well, you would know, Dr. D, how addiction has two components here, right? First, you have to have something that gives you a withdrawal response.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When you take it away, your body craves it. And then two, there's the behavior aspect. So you have to have that behavior where you're going around and you're seeking more of it and you're willing to change your life. And I've worked through the opioid crisis here and it's a mess with people. And the conversation is hard to say, you know, when somebody's going around to emergency room after emergency room after emergency room to get their, you know, pain pills at this point. And I would say, you know, you've got to check your behavior now. And they would just be shocked because I would say, hey, catch what you're doing. Right. They couldn't catch what they were doing. And that's kind of how I see addiction is you're just going down this path and you don't see what you're doing. And yes, people can use in the rec markets, you can easily go down to the dispensary and pick up a bunch and just smoke all day long and numb out.
And people, they think it's okay because it's medical.
Right.
My students have a really difficult time or even patient understanding, look, even if it's medical, it's monitored. It's not something that you can, because they really are under the belief that it doesn't have the substance that will make you addicted. And there's a lot of ignorance around this topic.
Yeah, there is a lot of ignorance around this topic. I absolutely agree. I think you can become like any habit, it can be a bad habit. And if you're just relying on that to get through your day and how you feel and not tackling, again, we're going back to not looking at the root problem, just taking that Band-Aid like a pill or alcohol or food. You know, we numb ourselves in so many different ways.
And social media,
right? Exactly.
That's a big one in Kuwait. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we don't acknowledge
like
that,
Trump, we tweet everywhere.
We never fix the problem. We just keep numbing. I've been giving out pills for almost 3 decades now, and people will, they have severe trauma. You know, they'll be on 6 different meds, and that's not living either. That's just trying to function. So if you are using cannabis to the point where you're smoking all day, every single day, you're not accomplishing what you want to set out to do in life, don't feel like you're growing as a human being, you feel like you're just numbed out, obviously there's a problem there. Can you come off cannabis easier than some other drugs? Sure, but there's still going to be some withdrawal effect. You're going to be used to having it all the time. You're going to have to live clear after you take it away. And are you going to be able to do that? So yeah, there's some confusion about it. Is there the addiction? I don't think it's strong, but there's other factors. You know, we don't just want to slap that addiction label on there. There's other factors as well.
So one last question before we wrap up, and this is for listeners in Kuwait and listeners abroad in the United States. And we're speaking for two groups and we're probably going to get shot for this episode, but I really don't give a shit. It's fun. Now, when I go to the States, I stock up on all my CBD products. I get my rubs and I go with 2 really good brands that I enjoy that work for me, which is Hello Ned. I found them to have a very pure product, and Charlotte's Web. That was recommended to me. And the creams, I thought it was a bunch of bullshit until I rubbed it on my knee that was hurting for 5 days. And I looked at my wife and I go, no way. This can't be the placebo effect. And it really did help bring down the swelling and the inflammation. And the CBD actually helped me fall asleep. And I ran out, especially when COVID-19 started and at the height of my anxiety, which kind of sucked. So what could you recommend to some of our listeners that do travel abroad and that are able to pick up, you know, whether it's CBD hemp oil, whether it's the hemp creams or the hemp gels. They have a new cooling gel out. And I've seen so many products that it's turning, it's becoming
just
overwhelming.
It just has menthol in it.
I know, right? It's the icy hut of marijuana.
Exactly.
What would you say the essentials are that people should pick up the next time they're in the United States or Europe? And what essentials should Americans or people that live in the West be looking at to add into their daily supplements to sort of mitigate some of the medications and everything else that they're taking, some of the go-tos?
Oh, great question. Big question. What to take to mitigate some of their other medications? Oof, that's a big one.
That was a big word, by the way. I don't usually use big words.
Yeah, that was good. I like that.
Good job, Maddie.
Thanks, Maddie.
We're impressed, Maddie.
Very well done. Bring it in there. Right? I love the creams and balms as well, let me tell you. And when people come to the dispensary, I'm said, take advantage of the fact you have THC for burns. And for wounds, let me tell you, quick stories, is I've seen people who've had, there was a guy that had a wound on the front of his chest that would not close and heal, a gaping wound for 2 to 3 months. He had cancer, so his body just didn't have the immune response to close it. They were going to move a muscle over to close it.
Oh, man.
It sounded horrible. And we put some oils on him. Within 2 weeks, it closed up. So it actually helps heal the wounds. Mm-hmm. THC helps with sunburns and burns. So he had nothing else to put on there, immediately takes the pain away. It's fascinating. So I'm a huge fan of the balms. You want to look for products that are not just hemp, but have the cannabinoids in them, because hemp does not necessarily mean CBD. So flip the bottle over, see what's on the back. I've seen products around here that have CBD, not only CBD, but CBN, CBG, all the good stuff we were talking about. The more cannabinoids you can see in there, the better. You will never be able to buy a product with THC without going into a dispensary. So don't worry about grabbing a product at a store and thinking it'll have THC. It will not. It will only be products that are sold in dispensaries where you'll be able to get that kind of stuff. In terms of, I like a company called tribecbd.com. They do have a bunch of cannabinoids blended in. You want to look for products that are well-made. I probably, like I said, wouldn't get it at the gas station. I probably, would go into, even in my town alone here, we have two that I can think of off the top of my head. And you go in and you sample it. So I sampled a CBD. I felt it. It was a 10 milligram sample, which is really the dose you want to start off with. I find that 10 milligrams is a great starting dose, but often people need 20 to 50 milligrams to really get the effect that they want. So dose is important. If you're taking too little, you're not going to feel it. If you take too much CBD, you tend to get a headache or a little upset stomach. And funny enough, those are also the side effects listed for CBD in our pharmacies is called Epidiolex, E-P-I-D-I-O-L-E-X. And that is plant-based CBD in the pharmacies by GW Pharmaceuticals. And they say in the literature that too high a dose, you get sedation, you get upset stomach, and you get a headache. So that's where you know your stopping point is to say too much. But a dose of between 10 and 50 milligrams is really quite a nice place to go. You can dose it orally every 4 to 6 hours as you need it, because those oral doses are every 4 to 6 hours. So look at the back of the bottle, make sure there are cannabinoids in there, make sure it's from a legit place. Usually these stores have some pretty good manufacturers, these little CBD shops, they're pretty decent. And they'll talk to you and they'll tell you about their product, where it comes from, where it's made, and do a little research on it. And you can usually end up with avoiding the stuff that's just that has nothing in it. It's a waste of money.
Yeah, that is key. We're big on sourcing for not only your food, but obviously for something like this, that's, you know, it's kind of even same things like we talked about before, like when coconut oil became, you know, viewed as healthy, then it's like you got all these shit brands out there that you could get it cheaper, but they weren't coconut oil.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to touch on, and I don't know if you have any insight on this, but CBD for pets.
Interesting. I love this topic. I almost put it in my book, but I decided to keep it focused. So I didn't, because I did some research on it. I actually tested it out with my own dog. So I had a Great Dane, my little doodle bear. And he developed a mast cell cancer on his paw and it just wasn't really treatable. And I couldn't put down $7,000-$8,000 to treat the cancer. So you could tell he was uncomfortable. So I started to give him some CBD at a dose of around 20 milligrams, immediately perked him up until the cancer really started to spread through his body. So I noticed an immediate difference myself. Some of these treats are super, super low on the dose, like 2 milligrams. So you might want to be careful with, there's a website I found, InnoVet, I-N-N-O-V-E-T. They make great CBD mixtures for horses. So I've actually recommended to patients who are looking to save some money, because who cares if it's made for a horse or a human, as long as it's good quality. So I would say, for anti-inflammatory. And then for dogs also, my vet kept trying to push this Rimadyl. And I've had dogs before. As soon as you put them on it, it breaks down their kidneys. It breaks down their livers. It's so harsh to get through the body. Yes, it'll make them feel good for a minute, but the damage it does later on, it's not acceptable for me. So I think that CBD, if you can find the right dose, is absolutely fantastic. And you just want to make sure you get something that's not 2 milligrams or 1 milligram, unless you have a teen dog. Mm-hmm. Not if you have a great day. Yeah.
No, that's a big dog.
Yeah, love them.
That's amazing. Where can people, I guess, like, you know, find guides to help them with their shopping or their sourcing or your resources, your book, all those things? Yeah. Like, where do you want to lead people to keep this education going?
Beautiful, beautiful. My website is swayinnovations.com. Mm-hmm. I am starting this whole education thing. I've actually just started working for Curaleaf, and they are the largest cannabis company in the United States right now and Canada. They have their own product lines as well. So if anybody has any questions and wants to shoot me a quick email, hey, what's a product that you recommend over here? Or, I have this product here and I don't really know all about it. Send it to me and I'll shoot back and say, hey, that's good, or stay away from it. My book is The Cannabis Prescription, How to Use Medical Marijuana to Reduce or Replace Pharmaceutical Medications. So it's really blatant on what it does. It will tell you exactly what dosages to start out, exactly what a puff is, to not use a lot of puffs, exactly how to take CBD. And CBD has a sweet spot in dosing, right? There's a sweet spot where a low dose doesn't work, or a high dose doesn't work. You want to find that sweet spot in the middle. It talks about that as well. So if you're just looking on CBD products, it'll direct you on how to properly take CBD and not waste your time and money. So that's how you can reach out to me and get more information if you're interested in if cannabis is right for you.
I love it, Colleen. You have been so much fun to talk
to. I love your
energy and your insight.
Great. This was super fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. You can also find us on Instagram at The Project Kuwait. Thank you, and join us next time.